Hi, I'm Thad Russell for Reason TV. We're here today with Robert Scheer in our Los Angeles studios. Over the last 50 years, very few people have been more powerful or principled voices in American journalism than Robert Scheer. In the 1960s, he was editor of Ramparts magazine, a cutting-edge magazine on the American left. He was a longtime correspondent and columnist for the Los Angeles Times. He's the author of 9 books, including The Great American Stick-Up, How Reagan Republicans and Clinton Democrats Enriched Wall Street While Mugging Main Street. He's also professor of communications at USC Annenberg School of Communications, and he's the editor-in-chief of the online news magazine TruthDig.com, which has won several awards. Thanks for joining us, Bob. I wanted to ask you, I've been following your career quite closely for a number of years, and I have to say with some certainty that there's no one on the left who more consistently praises libertarians than you. Why is that? Why do you have such nice things to say about libertarians?
Let me start on a different tack, okay? I think you could have strong views, you can come to conclusions, as I have, you know, you can advocate certain positions and still attempt to be fair and objective. I think it's possible to do that. And I deny the notion that it's only people who are deliberately in something called the center who are capable of being objective, changing their position, challenging themselves, and so forth. And I've been associated with positions that later I felt were really wrong. I've made mistakes. And my first encounter, I guess, with libertarians came in the City College cafeteria when I'd all hear all about Mises and Hayek and, you know, all this stuff, and I guess Ayn Rand. And there were alcoves. There was the Trotskyist alcove, and there was the, I don't know if they were called libertarians. Were you in such an alcove?
At NYU Law School.
Oh,
NYU,
there you go.
Did they eat different things? They had different diets?
No, and actually it was a very lively atmosphere. I loved it. And, you know, and people challenged, and so forth. And so, I don't know, I never had the view that they were, libertarians were outside the reasonable debate. I think, my only concern is if people who call themselves libertarian are consistent. And so when Ron Paul, or Rand Paul, those are the two libertarians I've gotten in trouble with, so somehow on my Wikipedia page, I'm a big supporter of Rand Paul, because I dare to suggest he'd be preferable to the hack, the Democratic hack that he was running against, who didn't offer anything. And I've had kind things to say about Ron and Rand Paul because they're consistent on the question of the Federal Reserve and crony capitalism, bailing out the banks. I think they're very good. They're very good on foreign policy, generally, a consistent view on foreign policy, belief in self-determination. I think they're consistent with the founders who did want to avoid foreign entanglements and so forth. I still believe in public education, however. I believe in leveling the playing field. So, you know, I just don't have some kind of blind prejudice. I wrote a column today in which I had some kind things to say about John McCain, you know, who I've criticized and praised. So I think it is possible to be a leftist journalist and yet try to, you know, to be objective and call it as you see it.
So in the 1960s, when you were editing Ramparts magazine, you published Murray Rothbard and Carl Oglesby, who were at the time engaged in a project to bring together the new left and the old, what they called the old right, which became known as libertarians. They had limited success in doing so, but they did manage to coalesce with people like Students for a Democratic Society around the war and around civil liberties. Is that possible today, and what are the potential problems?
I don't know. I'm not a good political organizer, and I'm not good at predicting, you know, who's going to win. And at Ramparts, we weren't a leftist publication. We started as a Catholic literary quarterly. We were influenced by Pope John. We cared about the farm workers and Chavez. And I was the first non-Catholic in the door, certainly the first Jew in the door. And it was never an ideological publication. I think the most controversial thing I did at Ramparts in this regard is I had some kind things to say about Ronald Reagan. And I interviewed Ronald Reagan when he was running for governor. And I said at that time, we had an editorial, which I said Pat Brown had exhausted his ideology or his approach, the whole big government, big spending, and so forth, which was actually quite favorable to big business, you know, bring the highways and the water to Southern California and so forth. And I thought that Ronald Reagan did represent an alternative view. I wasn't going to embrace him. I certainly was disappointed about his gassing students in Berkeley, and I got gassed myself. So I have my criticism of Reagan, but. And then when he ran for president, I ended up having a lot of time with Reagan, I think more than any other journalist. We got along quite well. So I don't know about bringing them together. Let's cut to the chase. What are the real issues, okay? What's the problem I have with libertarians, all right? I believe, yes, if we lived in the world that Jefferson was describing, and we were basically stakeholders, and we were all white, and male, and we had a stake, some kind of farm, and if government were small, you know, most decisions were local, not some big federal, and we avoided empire and favored republic, because that's, to my mind, the main contradiction, yes, I think that's the ideal society, and in that society, you wouldn't need much government, much of a role for government. We would pretty much start from an equal place. We would succeed by dint of our work and our sweat. We could comprehend the issues. And yes, I think a notion of very severely limited government, government intrusion, respect for the Fourth Amendment, which is being ignored now, even the right to bear arms if you know how to use them and you're on your farm, all of that would make sense. We don't live in that world. We live in a world of concentrated economic power, of incredible manipulation. The free press that they enshrine, anyone could have one. You could have the penny press. You put up a wall poster. The Declaration of Independence was a wall poster that you could put up. Well, we don't live in that world. I mean, we live in a world of concentrated wealth and manipulation. And so then you have to talk about making it somewhat more equal in order for democracy to have a chance. And that's really our argument.
A few weeks ago, I heard you on the radio railing against liberals in the Democratic Party who were apologizing for NSA surveillance. And you, in the same sentence, I think, praised Rand Paul for taking the right position on that. What is it about liberals and much of the left today that makes them apologists for state power?
Well, people do stupid things on all points of the political spectrum, right, and have stupid positions. For instance, if you want to take the left, and after all, I was part of the left that was critical of Cold War liberalism, and we had our issues with Kennedy and even with Schlesinger, Arthur Schlesinger, and so forth. I think the stupidity on the left that I was associated with was we were for the Davids against the Goliaths, and some of those Davids turned out to be terrible and totalitarian and vicious, and maybe we were, some of us, not all of us, because there was a strong anti-communist left, there was a strong, you know, left committed to individual freedom and against any kind of totalitarian impulse. But I would say the errors of the left pretty much had to do with, okay, they're the underdog. Maybe they have to organize in that way until they can get started. I think in terms of the liberal position, what happened to liberals in this country is they got freaked out by McCarthyism. They got co-opted by power. Careerism trumped principle. Surviving and, let's take a cutting issue, the Cold War. Okay, if you look back at the Cold War, future stars, what the hell was that about?
It was right? A great liberal cause,
okay,
for one thing.
Yeah, right. But there was a construction there that any intelligent person had to know was absurd, right? The international communist conspiracy and its timetable for the takeover of the world. Well, there weren't two communist countries in the world that could get along with each other. I mean, the Sino-Soviet dispute went back to the 20s. Tito broke away. I mean, you just looked at it. The only communists that got along were some communists were conquered by other communists, like in Eastern Europe, and they had to get along, and then the second they could get out from under them, they did it. So the construction that ideology was supreme, that there were some kind of textbooks you could read and, you know, read Marx or something and you could predict, was all nonsense. And anyone who had a rudimentary knowledge of the area would know that, no, the Chinese and the Russians, even if they were reading some similar text weren't going to get along. They were going to be shooting at each other. And the Vietnamese certainly were not going to go under their thumb because they've been occupied by the Chinese for that. You could just go. So it was obvious on the face. As a young person, I looked at this and I said, it is obvious on the face. I thought, well, I'll just point out the error of their ways and they'll realize that and they'll stop this war in Vietnam, right? I went to Vietnam at an early period. It's 1964. I was writing about it. I wrote it.
Another great liberal project, the Vietnam War.
Yes, but it's not my project.
Right.
Okay.
That's why you're here.
I'm trying to answer your question in an honest way. I was operating under the illusion that logic and fact mattered, and that if one could point out these things, these contradictions, people would then say, "Oh yes, of course, we won't." But no. Because in fact, careerism trumps. Self-interest trumps fact and logic, you know, getting along, being in the establishment, having power. And that continues today. My last book was on the banking meltdown. Totally irrational. What were these collateralized debt obligations and credit defaults? They were, if the mafia did it, they'd all be in jail. It was a total scam. Anyone who looked at it knew it was a scam, knew it should be against the law, was against the law. You know, the merging of all this and everything. And then these people got along. They changed the law. They made all this stuff, they stripped it of any most minimal regulation, sold it as a certainty, and we're off to the races there. So my view is ideology is less important than integrity. That's my view. And the reason I'm here is I think there are plenty of libertarians that have integrity. So it's worthwhile talking to them. Certainly as many libertarians have integrity as people on what is called the political left. And I always felt that even back in the City College cafeteria. I didn't think these people were, by their very nature, the enemy.
Right. So there's considerable overlap between traditional left positions and traditional libertarian positions, right, on war, empire, civil liberties, the Fed. I know you talk a lot about the Fed.
No, my own view is we should get... I don't know that I ever was as ideological as you're suggesting. One thing that happens, I did grow up in the Bronx in the post-war period, and everyone was what you call left.
Right.
And Roosevelt was our god, and he was as far right as anyone would go, I mean, in the particular area where I grew up. So I do find those ideas to be exhausted. What I think are important is, you know, what are your basic values? My basic value is that every kid in America should have the same right that Colin Powell had, that I had when we grew up in the Bronx. We went to good public schools.
To become mass murderers, is it?
No. I have a kinder view of Colin Powell than you do. But if you read his autobiography, he makes some very clear points that what was done for us at that time is, first of all, we were valued. No one ever suggested if you grew up in our part of the Bronx that somehow you were throwaway. I think now in this community here in Los Angeles, we think of many people live in South Central LA, or area right around USC and so forth, as throwaway. They're not going to get at the dinner table what other kids get. They're not going to go to the private schools. They're not going to go to the good public schools in Irvine or someplace. And basically, we don't care what happens around the 77 precinct or so forth. That was not the America I grew up in. I always felt valued. And my parents were garment workers. They were immigrants. And Colin Powell in his book describes feeling valued. Okay. And things worked for us. The after-school program. The City College had free tuition, free textbooks, class just before us. I was just inducted into the City College Communications Hall of Fame. So I had a chance to schmooze with a lot of the old people. And we all share that view of what the school represented, what public education represented. So I'll go to my grave believing that we owe that to every kid, decent public education.
Are you troubled at all by the fact that it's a monopoly, that monopolies
don't
serve?
Yeah, I'm troubled about plenty of things about education. As I say, I'm troubled by the notion that you're going to have a massive school district as you do in Los Angeles and treat whole areas of it as, you know, the throwaway, and we don't worry about it. We talked before. My son teaches in a inner city school in Oakland, And I appreciate how difficult that is. You know, how do you find the parent, or, you know, how do you make this work? How can the school solve all of the problems that the rest of the society has failed? But I'm getting back to gut principle. I believe I am against privilege. I am. I'm against inherited privilege. I'm against the stacked deck. I believe in the soul. Okay, maybe this goes back to Rampart's Catholic thing. Mm-hmm. I believe that every human being is entitled to an opportunity to make the best of themselves, mm-hmm. a real opportunity, and that involves state participation. I, by the way, if you're interested, I'm much more in favor of it being done locally. I think the states should be more of an experimental incubator. Now that we've gotten rid of segregation as a state issue, I am all for experimenting on many issues on the state level. I think there was wisdom to the founders mm-hmm. there. But in terms of defining my own view, yes, I think there should be equal opportunity. And by the way, internationally. And I don't think we should be messing around with people and distorting their history. Another principle I have, having been a journalist, I don't like the fact that we just blunder into other people's lives. Here, maybe I'm more of a libertarian. So whether it's liberals or Democrats or Republicans or conservatives, this idea that you can just go bomb the heck out of people and that somehow is going to improve their life is, I think, extremely dangerous. So I'm much more, I don't consider myself an isolationist, because as Washington pointed out in his fair well address, he believes in liberal intercourse with people, believes in caring about them, believes in trade, exchange, and so forth. I'm not for closing the walls. But I do believe people have to design their own heavens and hell and make their own history. And I wrote a column today. I'm very much opposed to this idea that Muslims can elect somebody that they feel has good values to be the president of Egypt. Yes, I draw the line when he takes away the rights of others, if he would do that. But the idea you can just overthrow him because he happens to believe in a notion of God that you don't accept seems to me quite dangerous.
I think gut feelings are very important, actually. And I'm unusual. I'm an academic, and I'm not supposed to think that, but I actually agree with you on that. And I think that a lot of people on the left actually have sort of a genuine affection for government. They actually really like government. There's something parental about the government in their minds. And I don't ever hear that coming from you, which is one of the things that's attractive about you for me. And I just sort of want to ask you, what's your visceral reaction to government itself?
I never liked government, you know.
I'll
tell you why. First of all, I don't have to go back to my childhood. I've traveled in totalitarian countries. Okay, I've experienced and of the left or the right, you know. Quite early on, I tried to find my mother's area in Lithuania, and it was off limits in the in tourist tour. And the only way I could stay at that time in Vilna was to pretend to be drunk. Well, I didn't pretend; I actually got drunk, and I ended up being in the drunk tank and all that. This was, I think, 63 or something, 62. And I've been in a few jails. I was in Algeria. I was in Mexico. You know, I've run afoul of people, and in this country, by the way, it's no pleasure. When Ronald Reagan, my big buddy, was governor, I ended up in Santa Rita jail for a night, and that
he
was not pleasant.
My parents, too.
Okay, all right. So, you know, I never liked authority, and the Bronx authority were these Irish cops. They were quite brutal. I didn't think they were so wonderful. I didn't think the authority of the mafia was so wonderful either, but at least they had better music and prettier women. I never liked arbitrary power. I never did. And I resented, first of all, you know, I was in the new left. I didn't like the old left. I was a beatnik. You know, I'm an older guy. I'm 77. I mean, I worked at City Lights Books for 3 years. I loved, you know, the rebellion of the beatniks. And I loved their whole idea of not trusting any authority. That's never been my issue. I'm afraid of unquestioned authority.
I believe in limited government.
That is what makes you so interesting and unusual, especially on the American left, where so many now are praising government or excusing government for spying on us, for going to war unnecessarily. I want to stop right there. I want to thank Robert Scheer for joining us today. For Reason TV, I'm Thad Russell.